This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Good afternoon. I'm Judson Richards in for Rob Hart today. It's Personal Finance Wednesday, Part 1. Financial stress is causing many young people to delay marriage, buying a home, and having kids. However, experts say don't wait forever or let money fears derail your future. Push forward and make it work. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jessica Ray, Senior Lead Advisor for Brighton Jones there in Washington, D.C. Jessica, thanks for joining us this morning. Let's begin here. How can young adults balance living in the now with planning for the future?
Hey, Judson. Great to be here. This is a great question. Really, what we want to think about is asking people what is most important to them and their priorities. Start there and then budget backwards. So for example, if home ownership is important, let's focus on how we're thinking about putting together a down payment fund. But if planning for kids or investing in your career is important, let's focus there. We don't want to pause on everything because that's where the fear of money really pushes things and priorities too far out into the future.
Jessica, what financial myths may be holding people back from moving forward?
What I see with my clients is people think that weddings have to be these large, extravagant events, and that's often societal expectations or this desire to create this memorable experience. But what we often forget, and COVID helped get us a little bit closer to this, is what might be meaningful to one person might be different than another. So instead of putting on a show to make others happy, figure out what is really most important to you in something like a wedding or the size of house that you're purchasing. And as long as it's making you happy, that's what's most important.
Jessica Ray is joining us, Senior Lead Advisor with Brighton Jones. So Jessica, when is waiting until you're financially ready actually a form of fear or perfectionism?
When you're no longer working with a plan. If you have a plan in place, then you should be able to move forward in alignment with that. When you're instead just winging things and allowing that anxiety to overtake you, you're replacing clarity with fear. And that fear is stopping you from pursuing the things like homeownership or kids or a wedding, things like that, that will actually help move you forward. It's kind of like this idea of opportunity cost. What aren't you doing that's getting in the way of you investing in your future self?
You know, Jessica, let's stick with homes because I feel like that one may be at the very top of the list. What are realistic financial goals to hit before buying a home?
Have that emergency fund set up. So an emergency fund should have maybe about 6 months of your living expenses in an account that's accessible, because as we've probably all experienced, you buy that first home and your water heater breaks or the roof starts leaking. So you have to be prepared for those things that maybe you aren't responsible for if you are a renter.
Jessica, thank you so much for your insight today. That's Jessica Ray, Senior Lead Advisor, Brighton Jones, there in Washington, D.C.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, earlier this week, we discussed doing a mid-year personal finance checkup. It's also a great time to do a subscription audit. Joining us with a strategy to do just that is Sherry Greco-Rykus, co-founder of Rappaport Rykus Capital Management right here in Chicago, also the author of the book, Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, nice to speak with you today. So help us understand the importance of doing a subscription audit.
Oh, it's so important. I actually did one a couple of months ago, and there were two subscriptions I had that totaled maybe $150 that I was able to get rid of. And so I think a lot of us do these subscriptions. We forget about them. The fees can increase over time and you don't notice it. So I have a couple steps here of ways to start your own subscription audit.
I guess I would be curious, which ones could I ask what you were paying so much for that came up to that much? Maybe people are like, oh, yeah, I forgot I also had that.
Well, I had my Fitness Pal and I had upgraded to a special level, which I wasn't using. And then I had Audible, which I had a bunch of books in my library. So I put that on hold till I listened to those books. So, you know, those were just two examples.
So give us that direct advice about what to do.
Yeah, so what I decided to do is I kind of went through my bank statements and I kind of went through 6 months and looked. And the problem with subscriptions is you're getting charged in all different places. It could be your bank statement. If you have credit cards, it could be on there. So kind of go to your bank statements, your credit cards. And a lot of times you do subscriptions via your phone. They entice you a lot with these, you know, 5-day trial or 30-day trial, and you try it, you forget about it. So I have an iPhone, but any phone you have, you can go to your settings, and usually it will list your subscriptions. And even if they're not, you still have them, maybe you had it for a year, you could cancel it. So when the anniversary comes, you cancel it. If there's not a way to do it that way, you can always do like a calendar invite to yourself to cancel certain subscriptions. But, you know, you really need to kind of look at all these subscriptions. Are you actually using the subscription? And as you know, if I've been a guest on the show, I always say, what brings you joy? Is it one of your values? Is it something that you're using that you really want to continue using? And if not, just cancel. You can always start the subscription over again. And, you know, maybe once or twice a year, go through those statements, your bank statements and your credit card statements, to see if these subscriptions come up. Another thing is sometimes you can do a monthly subscription or an annual. If it is one that you really like and you are using, see if you can save money by doing a 1-year or a 2-year, if it's something you really value and you're going to be using it for a while. So those are just a few tips to save money.
They get us with those weekly trials, don't they? I always try to avoid weekly trials because, you know, if you read the fine print, you are signing up for an automatic deduction more times than not. You have to go through the process to get out of it, albeit it's like, hey, just try it for a week. But no, really, you're in it.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes, you know, you have to give 10-day notice or
right.
They do it another month. So, you know, it's a very slippery slope. So if you do those 5-day or 10-day, you know, put a little calendar invite to remind you to reevaluate if you want to continue it, because there's a very short window to cancel.
Sherry, thanks so much for your time today, helping us understand how we need to keep in mind and keep an eye on those subscription audits, because it can add up very, very quickly. That's Sherry Greico-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management, right here in Chicago.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, used car prices are surging as tariffs fuel market volatility, with new data showing the largest annual jump in nearly 3 years. Let's take a closer look with Jeff Gilbert, CBS Automotive Reporter, there in Detroit, Michigan. Jeff, thanks for joining us this morning. Let's begin here. What's behind the sharp rise in used car prices, and how significant is the latest jump?
Yeah, well, what we're seeing is a jump at Manheim auctions. These are where car dealers get used cars, turn them into auction, then they buy them from an auction, and those prices have started to climb. What's behind them is all the volatility in terms of tariffs. What's going to happen with new car prices? What's happened with new car sales? Inventories have decreased a bit because of that kind of boom in new car sales a couple of months ago. So all of that has a ripple effect into the used car market as well.
Jeff, how are Trump's new tariffs impacting both new and used car markets? And is this a temporary reaction or a sign of deeper volatility still coming?
At this particular point, what we're seeing is a lot of uncertainty. We have seen some price increases in the new car market, but it's more anticipating increases further down the road. Is this going to be the new normal? Well, we don't really know, because at this particular point, the reciprocal tariffs were set to end today. That was extended until August 1st. So there are a lot of negotiations going on between the U.S. and a number of other countries. Those will determine what things are like in both the new car and the used car market over the long term. But right now, there's a lot of uncertainty, and uncertainty tends to push prices up.
He's CBS Automotive Reporter Jeff Gilbert with us on WBBM. Jeff, could rising used car prices signal broader inflationary pressures ahead, similar to what we saw post-COVID?
You know, people have been saying that for a while, and it hasn't happened yet. I mean, if you take a look at inflation numbers, they've not been significantly increased, but there's a worry that that certainly could happen because, you know, cars are the second biggest purchase most of us make. So that has an impact on inflation, and there are twice as many used cars sold every year as new cars.
What should consumers and car buyers expect over the next few months?
They should expect the unexpected, so to speak. You know, we expected significant price increases by now, and those haven't happened. Now, in the used car market, it's a little unstable right now. Perhaps waiting a little bit will help. Perhaps it won't. I mean, that's a risk that we always take. One of the big questions here is about people who have leases. What do they do when that lease ends? Are they better off just buying that vehicle outright because the contract is going to have a lower price than you might be able to get on the used car market? That happened during COVID. So there's a lot of uncertainty. You just have to educate yourself and basically, you know, take your best shot because everything's a risk.
Jeff, are there any good deals out there for those looking to purchase new or used?
Well, Ford just announced a new round of incentives. They had employee pricing before. Now they have 0% interest for 48 months, as well as nothing down and no payments for 3 months. So that could be a pretty good deal out there. Don't know yet whether others have matched that. Ford's tend to been a little bit more aggressive on those deals than others. But, you know, if you look, there are still deals to be found.
Jeff, thanks for the great insight on that topic. That's Jeff Gilbert, CBS Automotive Reporter from Detroit. Still ahead on this Personal Finance Wednesday, strategies to help handle the money of aging parents.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Judson Richards in for Rob Hart today. Well, stocks are trading higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Mark Lucchini, Chief Investment Strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott in Pittsburgh. Mark, great to talk today. So the momentum behind tech stocks remains fully intact as NVIDIA becomes the first company to reach a $4 trillion market cap. Explain or help us understand what that means, Mark.
Well, just in terms of size, if you consider what a $4 trillion market capitalization is equivalent to, consider that there are equity markets all over the world. And if you were to rank them by the size of the market capitalization of each of the equity markets from countries all over the globe, with obviously the biggest by far and away being here in the United States with a $56 trillion size market capitalization when you include over the 4,000 some odd publicly traded companies in the United States, NVIDIA by itself would be the sixth largest on Earth, to give you some perspective. But along with the rally that we're seeing in NVIDIA today, the whole tech sector is rallying, as it has been over the last couple of months, as investors have seemingly renewed their enthusiasm for tech and tech-related names that are driven by the whole AI narrative.
Mark, do you like other players in that space like Meta, Microsoft, Alphabet?
We do. Two of our overweight sectors across all 11 sectors that comprise the S&P 500 index, information technology and communication services, both of which house those names that you just mentioned, Judson, are two of our favorite sectors. And they have been a leadership now over the last several years, and the momentum continues to support those enterprises. They have great franchises, moats to their businesses, and their earnings continue to grow at a pretty rapid pace. And in spite of the somewhat rich valuations that are afforded those companies, they continue to deliver.
We're joined by Mark Lucchini, Chief Investment Strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott. So, Mark, how do you see the tariff tensions playing out in the long term?
Well, I think investors are beginning to embrace this notion that, one, they're here to stay, and two, they're going to be in order of magnitude significantly higher than where they were prior to Liberation Day, April 2nd, probably by a number that is at least three times or so. What we're going to be learning very quickly here, though, is from companies announcing their second quarter results, is the talk by management about what they're doing to mitigate the impact of those tariffs in their businesses, to push them out somewhere along the supply chain, absorb them, pass them where they have pricing power on to customers. So we'll learn a lot more. But at this juncture, obviously, you can see ripples in the markets on certain days when certain announcements are made, like we saw on Monday of this week with regard to the tariffs that were being applied to Japan and South Korea. And we're likely to get more of that. At the same time, you know, we're also thinking that we might get some good news, at least in terms of perhaps the uncertainty related to tariffs and trade policy will recede over time as more deals are announced one way or the other. And we know businesses can adapt to it once they have a better understanding of what the landscape looks like out over the coming quarters and years.
Mark, do you find any areas of the market cost effective right now?
Well, I think, again, I've mentioned a couple areas that we like. In addition to that, domestically, I mean, you can think about it, industrial companies that are benefiting from the spend that's taking place on infrastructure and the reshoring of companies here in the United States, both those that were domiciled here in the U.S. already, let alone others from overseas markets, moving operations into the United States to take advantage of the tax benefits and other. In addition to that, we like the utility sector, which is benefiting from the enormous amount of data center build out that's required to be able to house the computer and technology that is necessary to power things like AI and just supporting the cloud related businesses of those giant hyperscalers in the tech and communication services sectors. We also like international markets, quite frankly, too. We've been quite bullish now for the better part of the last 6 months on European equities, which have rallied even more so than the U.S. equity market has so far this year. And we think there's been a secular change there by way of European communities coming together in a more unified fashion than any time in recent memory and committing to spending on their country's military and infrastructure that we think will support their markets and continue to see the advance we've seen in stock prices among European equities so far continue to, again, be well bid. And so those are a couple areas in terms of global diversity, as well as within the U.S. equity market, we think hold good opportunities for investors.
Mark, great stuff. Thank you so much. That's Mark Lucchini, Chief Investment Strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott. Up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, ways to help aging parents with their money.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, this Personal Finance Wednesday Part 2, managing aging parents' finances is often emotional and complex, requiring early conversations, careful planning, and compassion to best guide them through that process. Let's get some insight from Shane Gornick, financial advisor of the Forefront Financial Planning here in Lyle. Shane, great to talk. Let's begin here. When's the right time to start talking to aging parents about their finances, and how do you approach it respectfully?
Great question, Judson. So the I look at a John F. Kennedy quote where he said, "The time to fix the roof is when the sun is shining." So don't wait until there's some sudden health change or an emergency to get involved in your aging parents' finances. You want to do it when things are calm, and that makes a big difference. And I've been there when there is an emergency and the adult children don't have a clue about what's going on with the parents' finances. Seeing them walk into my office with several boxes worth of 20 years of financial statements trying to make sense of everything. It's so much easier to do it now when things are calmer, when it isn't an emergency. And then it's truly a situation where an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
So what essential documents, let's talk about those docs, should families gather now to prepare for future financial management or emergencies?
Great question. So the documents they should gather are recent statements for any investment or insurance accounts or policies that they have. Also, if there are any wills or trusts that are set up to make sure that they have recent copies of those as well, or at least know where to get them.
How could adult children help without overstepping or taking away their parents' sense of independence?
That's a great question. When it comes to aging parents, they've worked hard, they've saved their money. They don't want to give up control and have someone else be in charge of them or have to ask permission to do things. So the key is to make sure you're not doing it for them or taking over. You're just wanting to be involved. And you're just there to help, not necessarily to take over. And making sure that they're on the same page for that, and also making sure that you know you're not going to be doing it for them, makes it better for both parties.
We're joined by Shane Gornick, financial advisor for Forefront Financial Planning there in Lyle. So Shane, here's a tough one, but what are the signs it may be time to step in more actively with bill paying, account access, or legal authority?
It can start to make a lot more sense when it comes to that if you start noticing signs of cognitive impairment. You know, if things are being forgotten or bills are being missed or not paid, or even if you just notice those things not happening, but forgetfulness sometimes in other areas. It can be challenging to keep track of that stuff for people who are able-bodied and and clear mind and whatnot. So nonetheless, not to mention an aging parent. So when times are like that, that's an even more important time where you definitely want to make sure that you're getting more involved so that you can have an idea of what's going on and making sure that things stay as they should be.
So what tools or strategies like power of attorney or account simplification can make this transition smoother for everyone involved?
Great question. So power of attorney. So there are two types of power of attorney, power of attorney for finances and power of attorney for healthcare. So both are very important, as well as living will. So living will talks about to what extent you want your life to be prolonged. Those types of documents make it really are really important in that if something were to come up and they're not able to make decisions on their own financially or medically, that there's a framework in place and that you are there or another family member is designated to be the one to help them with those decisions.
The website, preparemyretirement.com. Shane, thanks for all the insight on a very important topic. That's Shane Gornick, financial advisor of Forefront Financial Planning. Hey, join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, the day of the $20 cocktail may be coming to an end.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Okay, well, cocktail prices are dropping at Chicago restaurants in hopes of attracting budget-conscious customers. We welcome Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach, to the show, based right here in Chicago. Izzy, nice to talk again. Is the $20 cocktail in Chicago officially a thing of the past or just temporarily on pause?
Nope, I think it's just on pause. I think the prices will come up, but I do think the industry in a lot of areas has moved too quickly, and people, just like they got tip fatigue before with, during and after COVID, they're getting drink price or cocktail price fatigue because drinks, cocktails going to $18 and $20, customers are looking at the reality of that, and that is they're being ripped off.
So can lowering cocktail prices actually boost restaurant revenue through volume and return customers? I'm assuming that would be the goal.
Absolutely. I went out last week in one of the suburbs and, we see cocktail prices around, maybe $12, but just down the street, went to a restaurant. The price of the cocktail was $18. It was insulting and unexpected, and we won't be going back there. I'll be going to other restaurants, and I think a lot of restaurants in Chicago are seeing the same thing. They move their prices up way over what people expect, and now people are going to where, hey, let's go where we can get a cocktail at $10 or $12, not $18, $20+.
Izzy, could more affordable cocktail pricing spill over into other menu categories like wine and entrees?
Well, certainly, wine has not seen a big lift in pricing. As cocktails have, the wine prices have been pretty stable all the way around. And in reality, alcohol prices have been stable. I'm actually out in Oklahoma today, and they buy the same alcohol that everybody else does, but you'd be hard-pressed to find a place that has a cocktail that's selling for more than $9. So, in cities, people are trying to raise prices wherever they can to make money. I get that. But boy, when you go $6 higher than the guy next door, that's a lot.
Yeah, he's a restaurant coach, Izzy Karish. Izzy, you mentioned being in Oklahoma. Is this an early signal of a national trend of cocktail prices going down?
I think so. I think that, more and more customers are going to be pulling away from their old favorite restaurants strictly because the cocktail prices have jumped so high. And the only reaction that a restaurant can have if they want to stay in business is, become reasonable and bring your prices down.
Can restaurants afford to be reasonable? I guess is the big question for them on what it costs them, to supply.
Well, again, the alcohol, the cost of alcohol hasn't jumped, substantially in that particular way, but the perceived value is there. And, restaurants are I get it. My customers, like everybody else, we're trying to make money wherever we can. But sometimes looking at raising prices so substantially in relatively a short period of time, the last year or two, was not the right way to go. So I think the restaurants need to find that sweet spot once again, bring their cocktail prices down in order to get that return business, because It's the return customer that keeps every restaurant alive.
He's the restaurant coach, Izzy Karish, based right here in Chicago. Izzy, thanks for joining us.